morning, everybody. I hope you can hear me pretty good. I'm kind of losing my voice here in Arizona with the weather change. Welcome to Vertical Live Radio. I am so glad to for our supporters and our listeners to be here today. My name is Celeste Duckworth, and I'm also happy to have our group of individuals, our creative individuals from Global I Am, International African Arts Movement. The intro, a little brief intro, was Take This Ride by Marvin Lee. And if you'd like to hear more of his amazing music, hip hop and rap, you can hear him at soundcloud.com/Marvin Lee Mills. Well, today I have some wonderful featured guests for you to meet. We've had them on the program before. We have wonderful conversation, and I'm excited to talk to them again and hear more about what they're doing now. I was like last year, I believe I had these individuals on my show. So today we have entrepreneur and author Patrick Anthony Howe, writer Leslie Ann Brown, author, speaker Nana Brew Hammond, and entrepreneur poet Marvin Lee. And we also have Elias Wondemoo, who is the leading publisher at Suhai Publishers at Loyola Marymount University. So welcome everyone who's on the program. And I just want to say that our cover art that you've seen us promote this week was by artist Jules Author. With Muhammad Ali, I thought it was a great, great piece of art. So if you'd like to see more of his work, you can see it at www.julesauthor.com. So let's just give you a little bit of an introduction here. So the Global Arts, the Global International Art, African Arts Movement is a global community of artists. They've been around since 2008. They are ushering in a new Renaissance movement by incorporating principles of faith, hope, reasoning, love, spirituality, reason, and intellect. What's interesting is that we're at a time here in America and I believe in the world where we're experiencing new Renaissance in really creative ways. And it's actually we can actually look back some years ago from the Harlem Renaissance and see some interesting things that line up with what was happening then to what's happening now. So I just want to start today by introducing you to each individual and everyone who's on the line today. When we start having a conversation, make sure that you let us know who is speaking, just for our audience to be able to know who information is coming on. So the first person I'll introduce to you is Leslie Ann Brown. She's an educator and a writer. She writes for NBC Black and has contributed anthologies both in Denmark and the U.S. She blogs at blackgirlonmars.com, and also her blog is Leslie Ann Brown Writes at wordpress.com. She's originally from Brooklyn, and I'm happy to have her on today, and we're going to be talking about what she's doing now and about an upcoming new book that I'm going to let her talk about once we have her on here. And then we also have
– I'm here.
I just wanted to give you a little – are you here now? Oh, okay, great. So Leslie has to leave us early, so I really want to have an opportunity to talk to her and – get more information about her book. So, Leslie, can you introduce yourself a little bit and tell us about your new book?
Sure. Hi, everyone. Can you hear me?
Sure can.
Yeah. Hello?
Yes.
Okay,
really good.
Yes. Hey, thanks for doing this again. I'm so happy to be here and to be in conversation with you all and having a new edition this time around. Hi, Elias. I'm Leslie Ann. As mentioned before, my name is Leslie Ann Brown, and I've been living in Copenhagen, Denmark for the last 18 years. I'm a writer and educator, and I am finishing up my book now, which will be published in May 2018 by Repeater Books in London, and it will be released in both the UK and the US.
Fantastic.
Should I tell you a little bit about my book?
Yes, Yes, that's good. You can tell me
right.
About your book. I don't want to give it away. I wanted you to be able to talk about it a little bit. So tell us, you know, what made you write the book and a little bit about the book.
Yeah, well, the book is actually, it's sort of like a lifetime dream of mine to use my writing in a way that sort of, where I can express my experiences, because I always knew since I was very young that some of the experiences I had was very much linked to the fact that I was born in the body that I was born in. And I've always been interested about that. And when I moved to Copenhagen 18 years ago and being a writer, I always knew there was some way that I had to write about my experiences here. And one day, a few years ago, I was talking to my son, and he made the joke that I should, if I wrote him a book, he would read it. I was like, hey, you don't ever read my articles that I publish. He's like, oh, why don't you write me a book? I'll read that. So he will be 18 next year. So I thought it would be a great present to write a book of letters to him. And the title of the book is called Decolonial Daughter, Letters from a Black Woman to Her European Son. And I used this book to just sort of fill in all the spaces that my son may not have gotten growing up in the culture he's grown up in, and also in the world, because I am in Scandinavia, but there is a certain mentality of the West that is here as it is throughout the West.
Yes, it is a little bit. It's very different perspective, I believe. So I thought it was interesting. I thought the name of your book was really interesting, and that's why I wanted to hear mm-hmm. you talk about it a little bit. So,
yes, thank you.
And so it's going to be available next year.
Yes, in May 2018, in both the U.S.
Okay,
and UK.
May. Okay, great. And so how are you doing there? I mean, you're still in Denmark, right?
Yes, I am. I'm doing quite well right now at the moment. I've sort of had a little identity crisis when I finished my book, because I felt like, okay, what am I going to do when I grow up? So I've been trying to figure out how would I like to use my time, and I definitely want to focus more on activism and the refugee issue over in Europe. So now I'm sort of just slowly putting things together, and I teach a lot of refugees, actually. So I'm in the process of trying to figure out how I could best use my role as a teacher to inspire my students, and also to just sort of spark more proactive engagement in general with the situation here in Denmark and in Europe.
And what is one of the biggest issues that you actually are having there in Denmark when it comes to the refugees?
Yes, it's a very big issue here, and it's not that we have a lot of refugees, but it's because they have had quotas, and because of the severity of the situation, which is what led to people leaving, and the solutions that Denmark has come up with. There's a lot of controversy wrapped up around it. So there's been a lot of debate and a lot of talking and a lot of people doing things and trying to figure it out, a better way forward as human beings.
Right. So it's just about the same kind of at one side it's an economic issue, and the other side it's more about being compassionate to what's going on in the world then.
Absolutely. And the thing is that Denmark is an extremely wealthy country, and we have a very strong social welfare program which has enabled Denmark to right now, even during the economic depression, Denmark is quite protected. Its citizens are quite protected. I mean, there has been some erosion in the system since I've arrived here, because the government has definitely become, they've gone more in a neoliberal direction. But still, you know, mm-hmm. the social welfare program is very much a part of the Danish mentality. There's a strong belief here that everyone should be taken care of, even the weakest. And of course, like I've said, it's changing a little bit, but it's still a very core basis of the culture here. So it's very interesting to be in a situation where you have this very strong social welfare compulsion, but at the same time, you do have people who are coming in, and because Denmark is so racially homogenous or has been so racially homogenous, you have when you have a lot of refugees coming in and they look a little bit different, I think it forces a lot of people here to sort of rethink what their relationship to this social welfare program. So it's interesting, and unfortunately, a lot of the rhetoric is very ugly, and it's quite similar to what we see is coming out from the States. But again, you know, there are people here on the ground who have been very, very involved and very effective. And I hope to add to that. And I hope that that movement grows even stronger. And I hope that, again, because right now, you know, as we're sitting here, you know, there are detention centers throughout Denmark where people are, you know, right now there's a hunger strike going on where in protest to the conditions in this deportation camp. It's so bad that some of the inhabitants have decided to do a hunger strike and to call attention to the deplorable conditions that they're forced to live under, because at this deportation center, their case have already been heard, and then the authorities have determined, okay, they have to be returned. But the unfortunate thing is that, you know, a lot of these people can't, there's no place to return to. So, you know, It's a free country, but not so free if you come from a certain part of the world or have a certain income. And those are the issues that I think we need to focus more on.
Definitely, it's an issue that I think everywhere, national and international, mm-hmm. we really are going to have to come up with, you know, putting our heads together and really rethinking how we want to do this. I want you to hold on as long as you can, Leslie. I want to bring Patrick. Patrick, how are you?
I'm good. I don't know if you can hear me.
Yeah, I can hear you. Patrick, let me just introduce everyone to Patrick Anthony Howe. And Patrick is an award-winning financier and a regular contributor to the Huffington Post on culture and business and where they intersect. And you also, you have a book that's coming out as well. Can you tell us a little bit about your book, Patrick?
Sure. I've been in the process of trying to complete this book for a couple of years. Last year, I had the good fortune to work with Jackie Shelton Green, who I call Godmother, and she introduced me to Richard Kralik, who is the publisher of Jakar Books, and I've been working with both Richard and a graphic designer there, Daniel Kralik, to complete work on Yes We Be, which is a really interesting experience, and not only poetry, where I was able to work with and respond to one of the poems that Jackie Shelton Green had penned in the 70s, We the Messengers, but also work with Abiodun Oyewole of The Last Poets, who was kind enough to pen a poem called I Am Global, which I kind of think harkens or plays off the meme of I Am a Man that came from the 60s and the 70s from the Black Arts Movement and Harlem Renaissance. Basically, it's an affirmation, but this affirmation, I Am Global, of the global I Am, Global International African Arts Movement, I feel kind of reflects the contents of even just this conversation, where we're fortunate to have so many folks from around the world and so many different creative expressions and entrepreneurial expressions. And so that book is coming to completion right now, and I will be releasing it in February of 2018. And then I also recently completed a chapbook, of poetry called Resistance, Renaissance, Revolution, and Evolution that'll be published by Moria Poetry out of Chicago. And the publisher there did a really interesting activity where at the first 100 days of the Trump administration, he wanted to send out a protest book of poetry to anybody. And actually, I would encourage anybody in the audience and many of my colleagues on the conversation here to look up Loco Faux Chapbooks. He's taking in submissions, and anybody who completes a book that's 25 pages long, he will gladly publish its on-print demand and send out to the White House. And it's kind of his protest experience to, you know, kind of protest a lot of the political and social stratification that have taken place since November 9th. So, yeah, and aside from that, I've been working with a number of different reviews like Killen's Review, the Xavier Review, the Mandela Review to publish short stories and essays, and I'm a regular contributor with the Tishman Review and the Craftsman Talk. And so, you know, all that is really dovetailing off the conversations that we've had and some of the conversations that I've had with Marvin going back years now, almost a decade.
Get a little bit of an echo here.
Yeah, I heard it.
Yeah.
I'll just continue.
Okay.
I was just saying.
So,
yeah, just kind of dovetail. Yes.
Well, I was going to say, Patrick, is that, you know, one of the things is that, you know, listening to you talk right now and reading some of your articles, I wanted to ask you a question. You know,
sure.
do you think the freedom to express our creativity is going to be one of the vehicles that changes our society and what's going on right now?
Absolutely. I think we already are changing our society, and I think that it is a vehicle. I think that, you know, I remember on November 9th, I was on the phone with Jackie Shelton Green and then producer Don Mizell, and I felt like a kid in the room with two of his parents. They were basically talking about the election and what had happened, and Jackie's tone was very much one of, we've seen much worse. And then I remember Abiodun Oyewole saying there afterwards that, you know, I think the silver lining on this is going to be an opportunity for people to come together as they haven't in quite some time. And so even though there's really oppressive forces that are out there that are strangling, and, you know, in some cases it's kind of a big disappointment this late in the 21st century to be having these kind of thematic gestures, you know, talking about KKK and neo-whatever and alt-right and Steve Bannon and all these kind of weird things that you never thought you'd be discussing inside of the 21st century. I do see that there's a lot of artistic expression from many of the contributors on this call. Marvin Mills, his poetry, his writings, Black Man Eyes, even though that's a couple years ago, you know, working with Nana Brew Hammond, also working with Leslie Ann Brown on a regular basis. I think a lot of the artistic expression, even of Elias Wandamu with Sahai Press, and then his recent press that he unveiled a couple weeks ago over at Limerick Park, Harriet Tubman Press. I think these things are all coming to fruition as a direct result of, you know, my goodness, you know, we're not going to be quiet. This is our time, and this is our opportunity to express ourselves, and we're going to carry forward, you know, the responsibility that we have from the ancestors and those who came from before us, and we're gonna make our mark, and we're gonna make things even better for our kids. So, yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Patrick. I want to move on to and introduce everyone to Elias Wandamu. Are you on the line, Mr. Wandamu?
He might not be.
Okay. Well, we'll wait till he comes on. So we're gonna go to Marvin. Right, Marvin, right now, Marvin. Marvin, my every once in a while I kind of catch Marvin, and I'm kind of like one of the true ambassadors. So for everybody out there, Marvin Lee is an international entrepreneur, market researcher for Africa and Asia, creative and daily growth speaker from Los Angeles, California. He's had 6 years on the ground in numerous countries in Asia and Africa, and he's focused on the present and future potential of the region. So one of the things is that what I like about Marvin, what he's doing right now, is I'm able right now, and I'm introducing all of our listeners to him, able to see just some incredible potential for collaborations in other countries that we may not have been focused on before. One of the things that I do that I really am encouraged about is making more collaborations with other countries that we've probably never reached out to before and being truly global. I'd like to introduce everyone to Marvin. And Marvin, if you're on the line, how are you doing?
All right. Hello. Can everybody hear me?
Yeah.
We can hear you. You're here.
Okay.
How you doing, Mark?
Yeah,
I'm doing pretty well.
I'm doing pretty well, thankfully.
Okay.
I'm actually in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, right now, and just left Korea actually last week. So actually in transition back over to Los Angeles. So excited about that, and just feeling good. I have been spending the last part of this year finishing up teaching ESL in South Korea, just exploring there, and also just continuing, like as you mentioned, Celeste, is just continuing to do what I can to forge connection and dialogue between melanated folk wherever I am. So just in terms of like last year, a couple of years ago, just collecting writings together for Black Men Abroad that we did, which was really great to do. Being over in Korea this past year, a couple of months ago, and connecting with individuals from Tanzania to Sierra Leone to folks from the U.S. over in South Korea, and just really looking to forge connections and seeing where we can actually, whether it's creative or whether it's business. Because I'm a big believer in the connection between America and Africa and America and Europe, and especially for us people of African descent. And I see a lot of great things happening just being on the ground. So I'm really excited about things that are happening and just continuing to create myself, like taking this year to actually put out a body of music. I had intention of putting out music until this year, but my love for music and my love for writing is just the marriage of two came together, and so I just went with it. And so I'm just loving the space that I'm in, just creating and just being okay to create, being okay to seek, and it's going pretty well. So I'm feeling pretty good.
Well, what I'll say, Marvin, is that the music is incredible. I've listened to your music quite a few times. I just really, really like it. I want to tell you, good job. It's really great.
Well, thank you.
To ask you, though, for being on the ground in these countries, give me an example of some of the things that you see that are, new opportunities. I know that I think media can be very biased in America and not really give us all the information. And so, we have an incredible incredible gap of understanding with a lot of business leaders here in America about countries such as Africa and Asia and Europe as well. So give me an example of something that that you can point to when it comes to opportunities for entrepreneurs. Because I know that you're definitely one that encourages travel, especially among Black men.
Yeah, no, definitely. That's a great question. I mean, there are a couple examples. I mean, when I actually began to travel, so for example, when I decided to come or go over to South Korea and teach English, what I didn't realize was the secondary opportunities that are available to individuals who might go out to Korea or China or Japan and teach English as a second language. There are many opportunities to start businesses. There are many opportunities to get involved with acting. I mean, there's an individual in South Korea right now who literally is like the most famous Black man in all of Korea, and he's a Ghanaian who I think initially went over to South Korea to study. So you have many individuals going over to different countries and, whether it be to study or whether it be to work, and then also finding these other opportunities to get involved with that economy or that country. So, for example, Korea is a place that, of course, gets a lot, especially from the U.S. side of things, it gets a lot of focus on the potential issue with North and South Korea. It gets a lot of focus on that. All throughout that time with all these issues, you have Korea, whereas, when it comes to technology, when it comes to you know, the advancements of the kind of society and the things that they have set up there, the market there, it's just so much potential for people to get involved. And so you have a lot of things happening, a burgeoning African-American community in expat community in South Korea. When it comes to the continent of Africa, I mean, people wouldn't know how easy it is to start up a business in a country like Rwanda. Rwanda is very, very kind of robust when it comes to helping people start up a business fairly quickly and get involved in that country. And so, you know, I had an opportunity to be in, you know, countries like Ghana where so many opportunities there and so many people that are, you know, that was really transformative for me to just even touch foot on, you know, set foot on the continent to go into Ghana. And so to see the people from the U.S. or from the U.K., you know, over in Ghana and to see the kinds of things happening, there's a lot of energy happening. And I would also argue that. Just when just as a person looking for the great opportunity, this is what I like to tell people is just when you think about, if you were just to think about the globe as your playground, if you will, and you say, well, where can I find the best opportunity to get a return on investment? Or where can I find the best opportunity to explore? Where can I find the best opportunity no matter, like just outside of thinking about, you know, for us as people of African descent, just purely based on business, you know, Africa and Asia presents a lot of opportunities, and Africa especially, and Asia as well. So those are just some examples for you, but there's so many. I mean, even here in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, you know, there's so many opportunities. So it's really great to be here too.
Wow, thank you. Thank you for giving us that, you know, giving us that on the ground look, because that is important. And I do appreciate, for all of you, for the most part. I mean, I'm kind of in and out of looking at what you're doing and catching up with you. And, you know, again, I have to say, I'm really grateful to have you all on the program. Again, I love to have this, you know, something like this every month. I think it's a very valuable thing. So I want to get to Nana Brew Hammond. How are you, Nana? How are you on today?
I am. Nice to hear from everybody. Thank you so much for bringing us together. I can't believe it's been a year already since you last spoke.
I know, huh? It really has. And I mean, when I see you guys, I'm like, oh my God, they're way out there, but. Nana, I just have to say is just I'm always kind of chuckle when I think about you on our first program talking about your experience in secondary school in Ghana and your book. And so now you have a short story coming out. Can you tell us a little bit about that story that's coming out?
Yeah, well, I have two short stories coming out in two separate projects, and I'm really excited about them. One of them is really sort of dear to my heart because a friend of mine, his name is Brooke Stevenson. He passed on in August of, I believe now it's been 2015 or 2016. Mm-hmm. And he had this project in the works with Simon & Schuster. And I didn't realize that he had, wanted me to be a part of it. And so when I found that out, this is me finding this out after I turned in the short story, I was so touched even more by the opportunity. And that short story, and I just want to say, to back up and say, Brooke and his brother John started a writing residency called the Rhode Island Writers Colony that I was a part of in 2015. That was just so wonderful because in the spirit of what Patrick is doing and bringing us together through Global I Am, Brooke and John are about bringing writers of color together in opportunities that we don't always have to, you know, get our, to do our work and to create with one another. And so it feels so good to kind of, mark his life in a way and be part of this group and be part of that upcoming anthology. So that short story is actually about a young man who is kind of lost. He has been accused of rape in his village in Ghana. And in his mind, he doesn't feel he's done anything wrong. And so he is sort of grappling with his kind of excommunication, forced excommunication from his community. And he moves to a new city, the capital of Accra. And there he's sort of really adrift. And he's trying to sort of, he's got a lot of rage about how he feels he's been mistreated due to this, what he believes is a false rape charge. And as he's grappling with that, I don't want to give too much away, but he ends up in a in another situation that forces him to confront, you know, whether or not he actually did rape this girl in his mind. And it was really exciting to write it because it's set in Ghana, which, you know, Ghana is where I'm from. And I just kind of love sort of exploring like things like justice in Ghana, like, you know, the criminal justice system, the culture, and just sort of like this, the day-to-dayness of life there. And this was an exciting project to do that. And it's also one of my first stories writing in the voice or writing in the perspective of a gentleman. So it was really fun to explore and write that one. And I'm also working, I also contributing to Akashic Books has an anthology coming out. They do a series of noir anthologies, and they're doing one on Accra, Accra Noir. And so that was really fun, too, because I got to focus on a neighborhood in Accra and write a noir piece. And I've never done noir before, so it's really fun to explore that genre and do that. So
that's you're also a very you're also a very prolific writer as well, Nana. I know that you've written for AOL and Jet Magazine and Trace Magazine. What are some of the new new magazines you've written for in the last since I saw you? And because I know you're pretty prolific in your writing.
You know, it's funny. I actually just contributed something to Leslie's column on NBC Black. I just contributed a writing recommendation. I'm sorry, a book recommendation for fall. Hawa Jandi Golakai's book, The Score. But I have actually not been focusing on doing magazine work or articles because I'm focusing on finishing my book. So I'm just trying to focus on that. I'm always trying to do as much as I can with the time that I have, because there's just so many stories that I have on my heart, so many things that I want to say, so many kind of slices of life that I want to examine and explore for myself. So, so there's that.
You know, I saw you in an interview, and it's an older interview, but it was interesting. You were talking about literature and how there's more African women that are really breaking boundaries to tell their stories. Do you think that we are seeing even more women who are writing from Africa and writing their stories?
You know, it's funny because when you said that, I was like, I said that? Because there are, I can think of a lot of African men who are also writing really beautiful books. I'm thinking right now of, the author of The Season of Crimson Blossoms. And at this moment I am blanking, but I can't even believe I'm blanking because he's a friend of mine that I met as part of the Africa 39 writing opportunity that I had back in 2014. And he's an amazing writer. And there's so many more. I do think that what is really cool is that there is this group of African women writers who are just doing, you know, the damn thing. There, you know, Taya Selassie, Chimamanda Adichie, No Violet Buluwayo. I mean, so many marquee names that are just really writing these brilliant, beautiful books. Mbolo Mbeu, the author of The Season of Crimson Blossoms, Abubakar Adam Ibrahim. He's an amazing writer. And there's, I mean, there's Teju Cole. There's so many. I think what's happening is there's this, in general, this beautiful renaissance of African writing that's taking place. Mm-hmm. And it's so exciting because the breath of there's also The Fisherman by Chigozie Obioma, and he's also a gentleman. So there's so many. Mm-hmm. But there's this beautiful renaissance, and it's really exciting because it's incredibly diverse. You know, you're getting so many different kinds of stories. You're getting stories about, you know, African immigrants in New York City. You're getting stories about, you know, the second and third wives of a chief in Nigeria. You're getting, I mean, you're just getting such depth, and it's exciting because I think that, you know, and I'm hoping we'll continue to see more as things are sort of trending in that way. You know, the population trends, the sort of, you know, cultural trends are sort of shifting in the direction of, you know, the continent, Africa and Asia, as the populations, you know, explode further. So it's going to be really exciting to see how culturally we start to see shifts represented in art.
Okay. Yes, I think I heard an interesting story, and one of the things that the young man said that I found was really interesting, and when I had to kind of step back and take a different view, was he said, really, he had done a lot of traveling around the world, and he said, you know, the one thing that I find so common about people is that they do want to know about other people, they do want to help people, but there's not enough opportunities. And whether the opportunities are traveling or writing a book or just having the opportunity to be able to be creative and expressive, it was just a very interesting conversation. So I kind of see with more writers from Africa, as well as introducing especially younger people to writers here in America, that it is creating a type of a bridge culturally. Kind of introducing people to introducing people to more of the truth of what the homeland is and what's going on in some of the little pockets in America that you may not hear about. So
absolutely,
thank you. We're going to come back to you. I want to see if Elias Wondemu, are you on the line with us?
Yes, I am. Thank you.
How are you today?
Hi.
Yes,
how are
I can
you?
Hear
I'm
you.
Sorry.
I'm fine. Just to introduce my audience, this is Elias Wondemu. He was born in Ethiopia, and he is one of the leading, or he's the leading publisher in African literature and academia at Loyola Marymount University. He's a publisher for Suhai Publishing Company and the imprint Harriet Tubman Press. So I'm really happy to have you on the program today. I'd like you to give us more information about what you're doing and about Suhai Press Publishing.
Thank you so much for having us, and this is a wonderful group of creators to be among with. I think as Nana and the others mentioned, our stories, unfortunately, is not told properly, especially in this new world for us. And that really, if you, Africa's history or Africa's knowledge has been hijacked for a long time. And there were many who spoke on our behalf. If you go back to Hegel, who was a very important philosopher, and even today students are learning from his writings and his books, but still the stories that he wrote about the continent is not corrected. that he wrote Africa doesn't have history. He wrote Africa doesn't have philosophy or culture. And those kind of rhetorics created generation of stories, a generation of scholars and writers who believe that to be the case. I mean, the classic example was the French president about 10 years ago going to Africa and telling the Francophone countries in the room, leaders on in the room, telling them that Africa doesn't have history. Those are the kind of things that you plagued the continent. And us coming to this, going to the new world and living with them, going to school with them. And I think it's upon us to correct those stories that we were miseducated and misinformed. It's up to us to correct that history. Another thing is that one thing that we came to know the computer forum in Russia did to American election, those are the kind of information, misinformation campaigns that has been done to many African countries and to the bigger knowledge of Africa. There was a study done by African Institute in South Africa, and the study reports that 3% of African knowledge production in the world of knowledge production globally, I'm talking about, Africa's contribution to it was 3%. And 2% was from South African white institutions. So the black African contribution globally was less than 1%. And that cannot be true. If it is true, it is the most damaging thing that we have done to ourselves by not telling our stories. And if you go back and study why that is happening, because none of us contribute on or control our knowledge production institutions. And so whenever you finish a book, you end up going to an institution none other than African. So that is really killing us in the process. So I think one is that media ownership is very important. The number two thing is that quality of production is very important. And whatever we do has to be competent to stand the length of time and also the marketplace. And I think those are the kind of things that we're trying to address at the high publishers. We have done it for the last 20 years, 10 years at the university, Loyola Marymount University. So those are the kind of things that we're trying to do at Zahai. We're trying to address the inequities that exist about our stories. And if we ignore our stories, what happens is that you and I will not talk as equals. And you will think of people who come from the continent not as supposed to, because you don't know them. And I would never be able to understand you, where you're coming from, because I was miseducated about you. And that miseducation continues in movies, documentary films, magazine articles, newspaper articles, because knowledge creates another knowledge. Whenever you want to write about a fictional story, or if you want to do a documentary, you have to reference books that exist before you. And those books dictate what you talk about the next person. And I think those are the kind of things that is really plaguing the continent and people of color around the globe. So we owe it to ourselves to be able to tell our story, to tell it with dignity, and also with some level of responsibility, because it's not about each of us. I mean, the stories we write will dictate how people will communicate and use that information. So in the nutshell, I think that's what Zahai does, and that's what we do here.
Okay. All right. And I definitely agree with you. I think that some of the things that I see even on because Vertical is online and it's pretty much 65% of it is a virtual company, that is probably one of the biggest issues I see is that, one, not enough of our history has been told correctly, and then the other one is there's too much information that's false information. So a lot of times we're correcting individuals. Normally, I won't say just younger individuals, but we're correcting individuals on the history because there's just so much of it that has been either diluted or people are seeking, but they don't, you know, they don't have the right information, places, and resources to go to. So I do agree with that. So how are you reaching out? Because, you know, I see that you're seeking to give voice to African-American authors and scholars. How do you reach out to those individuals?
As a publisher, I think one of the first thing I have done is that trying to, I am an Ethiopian in America. And when I came to this country, one thing that I couldn't find was books about Ethiopia. There were few and in different places, but I was I have struggled to be able to cover that part, and I think I have done good enough. There's more always to do, but I think we have done good. But later on, another thing came in, which was that, if you remember, Heinemann announced, this was a time where most publishers were consolidated or being closed, and even bookstores were being closed around us. And so at that time, Heinemann announced the closure of its African writer series. And I remember the panic that existed among many African writers, among with many, many of my friends. And I remember talking to them. I said, why are we panicking? This institution served us well for decades. And it's up to us now to start our own press and tell our stories. And of course, by that time, I started the African Academic Press as an imprint for African scholars, because that was one of the things that were missing. The African scholars were very, very well, much abused and misused, and they're not getting the right kind of attention that they deserve. So we did that. And so I live in America, and of course, I have many, many African American friends. And another thing that I have is that they're not getting another, you know, if their fair share of institutional focus. So we published a few books. African-American literature and writers. And one of the things that I have done 10 years ago was I published Voices from Lemmer Park. As some of you may know, Lemmer Park is an African-American center in the streets of, very close to Crenshaw and King Boulevard. And in that neighborhood, it's the Harlem of Los Angeles, the Harlem of Los Angeles, that's what we call it. It's an incredible artistic community of creative individuals of music and literature who come together to celebrate their work every week. And so we created the first book for Voices from Lemmer Park 10 years ago. And after 10 years, we plan to revisit celebrating the 10 years anniversary, and we noticed that there's that gap exists much larger than Los Angeles. So that's why we started Harriet Tubman Press. Yes, as much as we try to correct the social ill that the iniquities of information that exists between here and the continent of Africa, that is, I think, one thing to do. But at the same time, if it is happening in your own neighborhood where you live now, I think that it's upon us to responsible to do this kind of things. And I think that's where the Harriet Tubman Press was born, to give voice to those who are marginalized in their own communities. And I think that's what we're trying to do at this this venture. And we have lined up several book releases in the next several months so that they can be able to tell the stories that are not being getting the national attention.
Okay. All right. And I mean, are you, now I know you're, you know, you're there in California. So are you, or do you have any intention of spreading out to other areas or other states that may not have the opportunity? California is a very rich, you know, I'll say it's a very rich state in the terms of, you know, doing some more cultural type activities than some places like Arizona or some places like Texas. So are you looking at maybe spreading out and doing some of these events in other states?
Yes, I think one thing that we're currently working on is we have a very diverse and very senior editorial board, African-American scholars from all sorts of life and from any states in the U.S. So this is not a local publishing. This is an international and a national publishing house. So
Great. Whatever
we try to do is that the books that we produce, not only that it will be available across the United States, but also internationally. Another thing that we need to do is that to make books available about Africa, African-American experiences in African libraries, as much as we try to cover
Okay. Here.
That's one. Mm-hmm. The second thing is that just to come back to our poetry series, as the noir that Nana was talking about, one of the things that we're trying to do is that we are started a voices series. So the voices from Limerick Park we did, this is the Redux, and we're in the process of finalizing voices from Harlem and voices from Chocolate City, voices from South in Chicago, and so it's going to continue like that, capturing African American voices of this time in every corner and nooks that we can find them. And I think that's what we are working on. So our editors are working hard to make sure that this will be finalized. And so that's what we are heading to forwards. And currently, our editors are has different assignments, and that's what we're working on. So it's a national institution that we're trying to do more publications that will address these issues that you talk about.
Great. I love that idea, and I can't, you know, I'd love to definitely talk to you more about those opportunities of being out in other, you know, other communities. One of the things that we're talking about here in Arizona is the neighborhood that I live in. It's very culturally diverse. There's 27 different languages spoken in this neighborhood. And we've been working on some projects to be able to share some of the stories and the traditions, because it is such a rich community. It's probably one of the only communities in Arizona that has this much diversity in it. And it's been pretty interesting getting creating some things to be able to, I'll say, lure people out of their homes to do more cultural events here. Because we don't have enough cultural events here in Arizona, and I would love to see more of these different cultures in some of the events that we give here, so we can introduce more people to them. It's one of the communities that the city is really trying to save because of the diversity here in this community. So it's good to hear, you know, about your publishing house and about the Harriet Tubman Press as well. It's a great it's something good that I could actually introduce individuals to that are up and coming and that are looking for publishing houses, definitely in the African-American community. So welcome and thank you for being here today. So I just want to, you know, again, thank everybody. And I want to go back to Patrick, because I was talking about Patrick, that I would love to have everyone on again and actually talk about some of the issues that are going on internationally. Like, you know, Leslie talked about the refugee situation there in Denmark. And I think that's pretty international. And I think some of the other issues that we have in our country is educating individuals, not only educating them, but also educating business owners and entrepreneurs that haven't really embraced the idea that we are a global community. America can't survive at this point. My feeling is America can't survive at this point without reaching out and making some of these collaborations from the small businessman and up. Patrick, can you give me some, tell me a little bit more? I've been reading some of your articles and some of the interesting things when we talked about how closely connected the Harlem Renaissance was in its creative way and arts, and how actually we're seeing a lot of the same thing and the same ideology today. What I think what's really interesting is that in some ways it doesn't look like as a country that we've really moved too far. I think it looks like it's been more of we've covered it up rather than actually take it out, cut it up, deal with it, and not put it back together the same. What do you think?
I think there's a lot of similarities between now and the Harlem Renaissance. I mean, unlike other periods of time where we've had a centralized leader that was, you know, kind of the central focus of what it is that, you know, is going on in the cultural zeitgeist, I think that there is a multitude of expressions. They just don't have the mainstream platform of Hollywood, which is very warping of a perception of us collectively. And so I think that there's a lot of similarities, parallels, and I think that the culture is already there, and it's there and it's widespread. And there's a lot of brilliant work that's being created by people like Nnedi Okorafor, who I saw last evening, and a lot of the work that Elias is doing with folks such as Sean W. Cannon, who was the editor of his book, Voices from Leimert Park. There's also work that's being done by E. Ethelbert Miller out of Washington, D.C., with Busboys and Poets. And there's incredible work. You featured Jules's work, but, you know, there's other work from folks like Vinnie Bagwell, who is a celebrated sculptor, whose work, you know, focuses on folks such as Malcolm X and Frederick Douglass and so many others. And I think that the work is out there, and I think it's incredible, and it's all around us. That's my experience, and that's a lot of what I use the Huffington Post for, is, you know, is an opportunity to sit there and tell our stories, but even more so, just to express what is not being expressed, as Elias said. He said earlier in this conversation, that, you know, we don't go out there and we don't tell our stories. There are a lot of folks that are telling the stories, and they're doing it in a multitude of ways, whether it's, you know, putting together an app, a software app, that does some really, you know, incredible neat things, such as encouraging travel, you know, all over and around the world, such as what Marvin is doing and is in the process of doing, such as, you know, what Elias does in tapping into his network globally and referring to stories of the ancestors of great kings that existed in Ethiopia and are still present in our society and doing some very amazing things. It's there. It just needs to be given the platform, and we need to work amongst ourselves and not only show a great creative spirit, but show a brilliant entrepreneurial spirit, which already exists inside of the culture.
Okay. So one of the things that I did read an article that you did on a artist, Nolan Cooley, and I loved the article because it talked about bringing together the community with gifts of unifying vision, which is a great way of, you know, having an art piece that did, you know, that does bring the community together. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Oh, that was awesome. You know, Hannah and I have my wife, Hannah, who's also a brilliant business mind. She has a line of jewelry that expresses a lot of what we're talking about called Shop Mombasa. And we go out on dates around the town, and we just happened to be doing some rock climbing, and we went across the street and we saw an art gallery show that was opening for a young man who is autistic, but his parents really recognize him as being a brilliant creative mind. And they showcased his work, and the whole community kind of ran through that artistic showing, that gallery showing of his work. And it was really inspiring what happened, because it was just so many people from so many different backgrounds from throughout, you know, the community. There was Rastafaris there next to the surfers. And it was amazing. So that, you know, that story is, you know, one of many stories that I like to tell, where, you know, the artistic expression is there. It's being done. It's got its own platform and it's got its own magnetic pull, but it's not covered on any of the mainstream media platforms, as it were, and it affects the communities. And it's an opportunity for people to come together in ways that they don't typically come together, you know, because of social stratification and, you know, this is this group and this is this group, and they don't really mix, and they came together, and it was really a brilliant showing.
Yeah, and I agree with you on sometimes, you know, we're not reaching as far as we can reach, but I would say also Because I know every single one of you can think of, you know, what was that brick wall before you got where you're at. And I mean, so, you know, when we're reaching out to individuals, what would you say? What would you say if you're wanting to be a world traveler, Marvin, and you want to travel the world? And, you know, what do you tell someone? And, you know, what do you say if you want to write articles, if you want to be the best at it? Because it is such a, I mean, there can be times, and I usually tell individuals, well, you know, no one is going to attract everyone, okay? Some books will touch others more than some. Some artwork will touch more others more than some. But what do you say to the person that says, hey, I've had this great book, or I have this great art, or I'm a great writer, and I'm really trying to get out there and tell my story? What do you say to them? And anyone can answer this for me.
Well, Marvin here. Hopefully everybody can still hear me. I think that's a really great point that you bring up, Celeste, and a couple things come to mind. First, you know, for me, as someone who, you know, because I've been abroad for the most part for the last 7 years, back when I was in the U.S., and I graduated from, actually, I'm an alum of Loyola Marymount University, so it's really great to hear about Sahai and Harry Tubman Press, by the way, but the thing is when I was there, I could not have imagined what my life would be like right now. And the reality too is that in terms of my own journey of self and world discovery, that largely has happened abroad. You know, that might be different from other people's mm-hmm. story. And so mm-hmm. I would say that, you know, when it comes to a person wanting to maybe get some abroad experience, but not necessarily wanting to pull the trigger on it, not necessarily thinking that everything may not be in place. You know, I've talked to people on numerous occasions, and we, you know, oftentimes it's just this fear or this kind of uncertainty about if, you know, you travel, you know, 12 hours from where you live, or, you know, thousands of miles from where you live, and you spend even a month, or, you know, it's like, well, what am I going to be able, what am I going to take? You know, how's it going to be there? You know, it's just like this, all this uncertainty. And so I would say the first thing is just really think about what it is that you want, and think about the fact that the world nowadays is in our cell phone in many ways, right? It's like we can right. search so much all around the world from our cell phone, but there's nothing quite like going and seeing it in person. And oftentimes mm-hmm. for me, I would just be feeding that when I was back in the United States. And I remember when I was in university, how I actually started to initially get interested in other cultures and other people's stories is by getting involved with a publication, really blessed to get involved with a publication, a Big Brother Michael Datcher, who's over at Loyola Marymount University and involved with Leimert Park as well, with the World Stage, I think, some years ago, and even up until today, I believe. And you know, having the opportunity to read people's stories from various countries and learning about these things, like the reading the written word actually began to ignite this fire in me to really see what other cultures were like. And then, you know, going in and listening to public radio stations like KPFK. You know, I remember being up early in the morning. It's 90.7 FM for people in California, and Pacifica Radio. Also, I think is the other name for it, but just listen. This is a radio station that doesn't take funding from corporations, so they're free to tell stories the way that they ought to be told, in my opinion. And so, just learning the different perspectives on international affairs, you know, while I was on my way to work, you know, I looked forward to my drive to work, you know, going to my job that I didn't necessarily love, but, you know, I look forward to these international stories so my point is that I was, even while I was in my element in the United States, in Los Angeles, I was feeding something, right? I was feeding my mm-hmm. interest in learning about other cultures and people. And it was natural for me to pull the trigger and say, you know, well, I want to go abroad, and here I am today. And so the first thing I would say is just continue to feed what it is that you desire is the first thing. And in terms of creating and in terms of writing books, you know, I think about Colin Kaepernick. We haven't talked about Colin Kaepernick at all yet. And the expression and the stance that he took by, you know, by taking a knee as an NFL player, I think more and more people with that kind of platform ought to take stands. And I think, you know, I thought about that, you know, in kind of preparation for this, you know, thinking about what that meant to me and what that might mean for America, what that might mean for the world. And I just, you know, I think about it in terms of just the difference between focusing on what kind of impact and action is going to take in the short term, and then also thinking about what kind of action, what kind of impact and action we'll have in history. Because we, you know, we're writing history right now. History is being written. Mm-hmm. And so when, you know, when Colin Kaepernick actually took this action and you see all of the things happening as a result of that, you know, the kind of comments that are coming in response from some of the owners, and you see the you know, a lot of NFL players, other NFL players who are taking action when they actually at first they weren't taking action. And to see the ripple effect of that, Colin Kaepernick, by taking that small action, which wasn't even small, but by taking that action, he created a ripple effect throughout history. And at the end of the day, you know, 50, 100 years from now, when all the dust settles and we're, you know, we're either older or we're gone, we're going to have those moments. You know, you're going to have that artwork. You know, you're going to have those books. You know, hopefully, history tells us that oftentimes books can be burned, unfortunately. But we have this. We can have the stories that continue to go on. And in my opinion, is we don't just do it. We don't just express. We don't just create. For the sake of the moment is important for sure, but we create for the sake of history. And I just love what Brother Elias was talking about earlier in terms of trying to correct these narratives and everything, because in many ways, especially from my perspective as an African-American growing up in Los Angeles, and it's really refreshing to learn certain stories and read certain things of history that I did not actually get exposed to, and also having the opportunity to contribute to that. And so I would say that, you know, and I think there's a lot of great things happening. I'm so excited about what's happening right now within the global African community, just from the people that I've connected with while abroad and also back in the United States. A lot of things, great things are happening. A lot of creativity is happening. It is, like as Patrick just mentioned, like it is happening right now. And that's a lot of what Patrick and I talked about, you know, in terms of Global I Am, was actually seeing these pieces, like he mentioned, just seeing these pieces around. And for myself, being a person traveling and just seeing these pieces around, you know, being in Ethiopia and seeing creative people from Kenya, you know, being in Ghana and seeing creative people that are Ghanaian, you know, and wanting to reach over to the United States. It's like these pieces are here, but nobody actually thinks that they're there. And I think that ends up being a lot of the issue for us as people of African descent, is if we don't see it there, then it actually ceases to be there in our minds. So then it actually is like a self-fulfilling prophecy. So if we don't actually bring these pieces together and say, hey, you know, this is here, you know, hey, this is what's happening, then in many people's minds, it's not happening. And so I just think that's the other big part is by us, you know, it's kind of like the whole thing of, you know, people like to go to parties that are already people at the party, you know, like people like to like Facebook posts that already have 10 likes, you know, people like to do stuff where people are already doing it. So it's like, there has to be those people there who put stuff there when it's not there. You know, who actually say it is here before people actually say it's there. And so artists have the opportunity to do that. And I think that's why I'm so encouraged and inspired by all of the, you know, the people, everybody here, you know, Leslie, Nana, yourself, Celeste, you know. And so I just, that's what I would say is don't wait for it to be there for you to get confirmation that you can be an artist and that you can be a creative. It took me a couple years to actually say, you know, well, I'm just going to create. I'm just going to do what I came here to do, and I don't really care, you know. So it took time for me to develop those muscles to just do what I came here to do and to this earth. And so it's just, we should all be doing that. And that's what we have as a, you know, in terms of as creatives and everything. It's not one thing I remember. The last thing I'll say is that I remember talking to Patrick about Global IM some years ago. And I told him, I don't know if he remembers this, but I told him that there's something artistic to just being, you know, of African descent and you know, and just existing, you know, for
right.
you know, up you
right.
know, just
right.
just continuing to endure, you know. There's something creative and artistic to just figuring out a way to take care of your children when you don't think there's a way to do it. So we find a way to be creative and artistic even in our spaces, in our communities. And more people need to, I think, understand that creativity, that art, that artistry that we have, it's there, and it just comes out in different forms. And so that's what I just love about the time and space we're in right now, is that people are, more and more of us, people of African descent, it's like, hey, you know what? It's okay to just be me and all of my art and artsiness. I don't even know if that's a word, right? But it's okay for me to be me and all of my creativity. It's okay for me to be
right.
me with everything that I'm doing. And so that's what I would say is for whoever is looking to create and make things and just be whatever. It's like, this is your space and this is the time, and don't wait.
Well, I, just to dovetail off of
thank
what
you.
Marvin
thank
said.
Thank you, Marvin.
Yeah, thank you. Just to dovetail off of what Marvin said, African, to be African in the world is to be a creative genius. Whenever I talk with us, I'm always inspired by us, whether it's us in politics, you know, or whether it's us in publishing, or whether it's us in creating jewelry or sculptors. We're some of the most creative, most brilliant spirits on the planet. Matter of fact, not some of. We are the defining creative expression. You know, people always say American society, and they talk about Michael Jackson, and they talk about Michael Jordan and Muhammad Ali. These are things that we just do naturally. These are some of the gifts that we have. In my mind, you know, I think that we're just a splinter of a Holy Spirit, and I think that we have unlimited creative expression, and I think Marvin is dead on when he says, you know, hey, you know, just there's something to us just being us, and not being afraid to be what we are. And there's definitely levels to it, but there's also a whole world that's around it. I mean, every time you see an author such as Mehdi Okorafor, or you interact with somebody like Elias Wundamu, who is just simply doing some brilliant work right now, not only in the United States and academia and in publishing, or you interact with somebody such as Marvin, who is not only traveling around the world, but also creating relationships with people from across the diaspora, and then creating work from that. That's just what we do naturally. Now, like I said, there's different levels to it. There's us just being who we are, but then there's also just doing the work and then connecting it entrepreneurially to what can be, and we just have to be fearless in that pursuit, and things manifest themselves. So,
I agree with you, but I also agree too that we have to be diligent to do some reaching back. I mean, one of the things when you know, we do have very talented, creative people. I was blessed to be born into a family that were a family of education, you know, educators and scholars and writers, and so. You know, Sundays the house was full of, you know, famous writers that were just kind of like relatives, and listening to conversations. And so when I think of some of the, you know, kids that we have growing up now, and I think that they're not growing up in a family situation like that, they're not getting anything from school, but they just have this talent and they're very creative. And when you're talking to them and you talk about some of the things you've done and that, you know, you ask them some of the things they want to do, and you see their eyes light up. And so, I often say that, you know, we have a generation of kids to save. And so, you know, art just may be the way that we save them, the way we educate them, the way we turn some things around in our own community. And, you know, what you said about Colin, Marvin, I was going to get to that because I'm actually very proud of him for really – taking a stand in such a way that opened the eyes of other sports players, because not to say that you know, it had to be them, but you know, in a way, he's kind of the Muhammad Ali probably of our day, who's not afraid to speak up and has taken some really, you know, taken some hits. I mean, some people probably would have gave up right now and said, you know, I'm not going to do this. But as I see more and more athletes do this, and so the what I'm seeing is just a it's interesting to hear what some of the owners are saying, and then they're like, oh, I apologize, I didn't mean to say that. And it was kind of like, no, we're just really seeing who you are now. And more importantly, you know, the athletes are seeing who you are now. And, you know, and maybe they're just not willing to keep believing, you know, that hype that they've been convinced of in all these years. So I'm excited about the time in a lot of ways. I'm excited about African Americans really starting to embrace some of these issues that we have to get off the shoulders of our ancestors and start addressing. I think this is something that's not going to go away. It's not going to, you know, I'm not going to go quietly in the night type of thing. And so I think that even more we have to be diligent to, we're going to end up bringing some of our people up with us. And that there's some individuals that are doing that now, and that is truly a ministry. But they're having great success. One of them is a friend of mine who's the CEO of Hope's Crossing here in Arizona, and she works with ex-veterans. She works with veteran women. She works with women that have been incarcerated. And these women are coming out of that program just amazing. And being able to see some of the creativity that they couldn't see in themselves while they were incarcerated. So, yeah, I see this as a great time for a lot of people, but I see those of us that have this opportunity, Patrick, you, Marvin, and Elias, and Nana, and Leslie, I see all the things that we're doing as vehicles to not only, you know, move forward, but to reach back and pull forward. So definitely, I'm just so glad to, you know, my dream or my goal is to continue to have these conversations every month and to really promote the conversations and invite more and more individuals from Global IM and to even new individuals to kind of start creating those bridges, even though the bridges through radio and through our creative, you know, our creative expressions, and to, you know, really pull them along in such a way that we actually start creating a more cohesive movement rather than being having little factions here and there and everywhere. Anybody else want to have a comment?
No, just to say thank you all for, again, bringing us together. I'm really looking forward to all of your books. It's exciting to hear all the projects that you're working on. And, Patrick, I'm going to message you offline to ask you about, you mentioned there's like a chapbook series where someone is publishing in Trump protests, which I thought is really interesting. Thank you again for this opportunity.
Yes, and make sure that you send that information to me as well, Patrick. And I want to say again, thank you, everybody. I hope I can get you back when you're, you know, to hear more about your books and also to continue our discussion and see what new people we have reached out to. And I want to say, Mr. Wondermove, thank you so much for being part of this conversation today. Do you have anything else that you'd like to say to us today?
Thank you so much for having me and to be among this wonderful and creative brothers and sisters. And I think we were talking about Kaepernick earlier. I think we are kneeling in our own arenas, you know. We are not sport personalities, unfortunately. We are not going to have that kind of platform. But in whatever a platform that we own and that we champion, I think all of us have a responsibility to be the conscious of our society or the voice of our own communities, whoever they might be, they're marginalized or not even have a voice to speak of. So I think, you know, as much as we are admiring and supporting and agreeing with what Kaepernick did, I think it's up to us. And I think we live in a very extraordinary time, unfortunately, a time. And what we do will make a difference. Otherwise, you know, this is not the first time this personality took office. This is not the first time in our world that this happened. We always go back and ask, how did the, you know, so that generation allow this to happen? And we have said mm-hmm. those things, those same words many, many times in the past, when in our history classes, in our political conversations, in our other discussions, guess what? It just came back. And now it's just looking at us and it's expecting it to see what we do about it. And so if we don't do anything about it, guess what? Fascism is going to reign. And then the life we know is going to not to be the same. And fascism, as we have seen it, I mean, as an Ethiopian, we lived through one, the Italian invasion the second time. Fascism starts like this. Mussolini took office mm-hmm. the same way that this person took office. And to please the status quo in his own country, he came and invaded Ethiopia. And so the next thing that this guy would do, God knows what. But at the same time, I think what we do in our own space will determine how the world will, history will judge us. And so I think we have a lot, there's a lot of stake on what we do. And we may not be demonstrating every day, others would do. If that's the case, they should do it. If it's kneeling, that's what they have to do. But I think as writers, this is the most important thing, and most of the people in this conversation is writers and creative personalities. I think it's a lot is expecting of this group of people, because these are the group of people who are the conscious of our communities. And so I think it's important, and we don't have any enmity with a personality. It's with a system that we have a problem with. The system that allowed this person to take office. And so we all have to ask ourselves, what is our responsibility, our duties as a human being at this historical moment? And so as much as we fight for ourselves, our rights to do the things that we wanted to do, I think we have to right those who are not able to do to fight for themselves. So I think our responsibilities are so humongous that I don't want it to cripple us. I think I want it to inspire us so that we can do the smallest thing that we can do and a greater passion that we can master. And I think I want to thank you for having us on this show, and I look forward to continuing our collaboration and conversation.
I do too, Elias. Hey. I would love to have you back on as well. And continue to have the conversations and letting us know what you're doing at Souté Publishing Company and with Harriet Tubman Press. Patrick, Marvin,
yes.
Nana, thank you so much. And Leslie, I'm
going to
be looking forward. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, in answer to Nana's question earlier, the name of the publisher is William Alegreza, and he's out of Indiana, but he actually does a lot of work in Chicago as well. And I'll send you more information about that offline. But yeah, what he's doing is pretty incredible.
Thank you.
That would be great. I would love to have that information as well to share. So thank you so much for mentioning that to us. And definitely all of you, I just welcome any information that you'd like to send me to share. I'd love to have you on again when we can get together again. Definitely, Patrick, this is something that we need to do monthly. Continuing our conversation. I would love to do this. So, everybody, thank you so much for being a part of our program today. I feel great having you here again. And Marvin, definitely want to be hearing some more from you in your travels and about, any collaborations for business individuals or entrepreneurs. We want to keep hearing about those opportunities that are in other countries that you're on the ground with as well. So
I just want to tell everybody to have a fantastic day, and thank you for giving us Vertical Live Radio, for giving us your time today.
Okay. Thank you so much, Celeste.
Yes, thank you, Celeste, you. Very much. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thank you.
Everybody
you.
Else, thank you.
You. Thank you, Nana. Thank you so much. And for our audience, thank you for always supporting us at Vertical Live Radio. And we're going to leave with a cut from Marvin Lee that's called Black Queen. And we'll be looking for you again next week. Bye, everybody.